You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. Matthew Leach talking Toronto Blue Jays with MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, we keep talking about it, but he's a pretty essential player for this team. Michael Saunders appears to be getting closer and closer. What's his status, and how soon are we looking at this guy maybe being a realistic possibility for Major League games?
Yeah, it looks like, it's been positive news pretty much throughout this entire situation for him ever since he went under the knife, and it looks like there's a chance that he might be ready for the Blue Jays home opener on April 13th. He's started a rehab assignment, and that's obviously a big move for him. He was, prior to that, able to appear in some games on the minor league side as a DH during spring training. He didn't run the bases, didn't play the field, but that should help speed up this process, because one of the things that usually takes the longest is trying to get your timing down at the plate. So he's a little bit ahead of the game in terms of that, but what he still needs to do before he can actually get clearance to come up to the big leagues again is just prove that he's able to run without any kind of limitations, that he's going to be able to play left field totally fine. So it could be as early as April 13th, but even if it's not then, I wouldn't expect it to be much longer than that at all, maybe a couple more days.
That would be an awfully big boost. I mean, how big a part was he supposed to be of what they're doing? I mean, I get the feeling he's not a name guy, but it just seems like he's a really essential fit and for what they have offensively, a real need, really addresses something that they needed and fills a hole of something that they didn't really have.
Yeah, I think he's a really underrated piece. When you look at all the moves the Jays made this offseason, he's probably one that went under the radar a little bit. But he really goes a long way in helping to lengthen out that lineup. I mean, you put him in the sixth spot behind the core of that lineup. And, you know, the Blue Jays don't have a lot of power from the left side. They obviously have lots from the right when you're talking about, you know, 2 through 5 with guys like Russell Martin, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson. But the left side is something that they really lack. I think they're hoping that Justin Smoak will give them a little something like that, but he's not nearly as proven of a hitter over the last several years as Michael Saunders is. And they really, the only other lefty on top of that, you go with the switch hitting Jose Reyes. So he gives the Blue Jays a different look. I also think that they really like the defense that he brings in left field. He might not be as good of an overall hitter as Melky Cabrera, but he provides a lot better defense and a lot more range in left field. And the outfield defense has been a concern for the Blue Jays for the past several years, so he helps shore that up as well.
Now let's play a little massively overreact to absurdly tiny sample sizes. Edwin Encarnacion has been a guy who at times has not started well. Through all of 2 games, he has started well this year. Is it a surprise at all, given the challenges he had in spring training? And what could this mean if he is able to put it together for 6 months instead of 4?
Yeah, it would be a huge component of this lineup. There's no question about it. I mean, he had a great year last year when he was healthy, with the exception of that, you know, month that he missed with the quad injury. But when you look at the April that he had last year, it was really, really poor, and a lot of people were wondering whether or not he'd be able to turn it around. You know, he didn't hit his first home run in April until, I think it was around like April 22nd or something like that. He finished that month with just 2 home runs. You know, when it comes to Encarnacion, the one thing that he always talks about is his timing. And, you know, a lot of other hitters would be in the same boat as that, but he's a guy who really goes through the ebbs and flows with that. He's a streaky hitter, and when he can get things zeroed in at the plate, that usually means really good things. And the fact that it's happened this quickly, especially after missing a significant period of time in spring training, you'd think that this would be the year that he would start off slow, but he was able to get into some games in that final week in spring training, and that proved so far to be enough for him to get comfortable in the box. And, you know, he's a guy who, you know, I think a lot of more people talk about Bautista or maybe Donaldson in this lineup. He's a guy who probably has the most power of any of those guys right now, and if he can get going from day one and carry that through a large portion of the regular season, it makes that core of the lineup even a little bit more scary than it was originally.
And one more massive overreaction. A month ago, it didn't look at all like Devin Travis was even going to be on the roster, never mind playing regularly. And now he's certainly done Done a few nice things in his first taste of big league regular season. First of all, what are you seeing from him at the plate? I mean, he seems like, for his youth, a pretty polished offensive player.
Yeah, and the thing that, you know, he got a lot of attention, obviously, for the home run as his first major league hit on opening day, and that was a great storyline for everyone involved. But what impressed me the most about his game that day, and really the second game as well, was his patience at the plate. I mean, we've seen it many, many times where rookies come up to the big leagues and they press and they feel the need to expand the strike zone and they're swinging at almost anything close because they want to make a good impression. They just try a little bit too hard. Travis showed that he can, you know, you could tell he was nervous when he got named to the team, and you could tell he was nervous earlier in the day and opening day. But when the game actually started, he was able to calm all that and become a pretty relaxed guy throughout that game. And I think that showed in the two walks that he had on opening day, which I think is a big, big bonus because, you know, hitting at the bottom of that order, he's got to have a decent on-base percentage so he can help turn the lineup around. I mean, that's the one question mark in this lineup is probably the final three hitters in the order. If those guys can turn the lineup around to the top of the order enough, I mean, this lineup is going to be very, very potent. So to me, it was really the patience that he showed that really kind of gives the Blue Jays, I think, a lot of hope that he will be up here to stay and not just as a temporary fill-in until some of their injured guys get back.
And, I mean, I think the offense, how good he's been offensively may be a bit of a surprise, but the fact that he has shown some ability offensively is not a surprise. The issue seemed to be they weren't entirely sure he'd be ready defensively. What has he shown, again, two games, I realize it's hard to say, what has he shown on the defensive side?
He's been solid, and I think that's just what the Blue Jays are kind of hoping for. They know he's not a Gold Glove caliber defender, but there haven't been really any issues with him yet, and I think the big test is still going to come when he goes on the AstroTurf at Rogers Center and see how he reacts to a faster playing surface. But so far on natural grass and spring training and here at Yankee Stadium, he's been just fine, and I think that's exactly what the Jays are looking for. I think the one major adjustment that he has to make is the Blue Jays like to do a lot of shifts on the defensive side. And when he's shifting here in Toronto, he's often in shallow right field, and that's a bit more of a test for his arm. It's something that he's not used to doing as well. He's never really shifted into that shallow right field and kind of played at a position like that. So it's something he's still adjusting to. But on opening day, you know, he got tested on that. There was a ground ball into shallow right field. He kind of converged with Reyes, and there was almost a little bit of miscommunication. But, you know, he was able to kind of stay relaxed in the moment enough to make the play and then make the strong throw. And I think all of that, those are encouraging signs.
So we've had a happy talk for 8 minutes. We got to go to the other direction for a minute here. We knew the bullpen was a worry. We knew that there were reasons to be concerned. We knew they'd taken out a key body from it. And right now, it's showing itself to be a concern. How big a worry is it, and what can they do?
It has to be a concern. And you know, for as many positive stories as we've seen on you know, the prospects, Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna, and so far in the regular season, that's carried over. They've played well. To me, the most concerning aspect in all of this is Brett Cecil. And Brett Cecil missed a lot of time in spring training because of his shoulder injury. But, you know, when he came in to make his debut in the second game of the season last night, he was in a very tough situation. He came in with the bases loaded. The back-to-back game got away from him. Isn't the biggest issue, in my opinion. The biggest issue is the fact that his velocity was down by quite a bit. He was sitting around 87 miles per hour with his fastball. He topped out at 88. That's kind of a situation that he was dealing with a few years ago as a starter. He seemed to get all that figured out when he went to the bullpen. He was able to get the velocity back up to the low 90s, anywhere from 92 to 94. But if he's going to be 87, 88, that's a big concern. He admitted after the game that he's a couple weeks behind everybody else. So I think the hope is that they'll find a way to kind of settle him in here. And once he gets a little bit more work, that velocity will come up. But he has to be a major, major piece of the bullpen. And if that diminished velocity stays where it's at, that's a huge concern for this team.
And one last thing. You had a very interesting piece, I thought, yesterday about R.A. Dickey and when he really blew up, what made him different, what made him not like every other knuckleballer was that he threw that power knuckler. He threw a knuckleball with velocity, and it was a unique pitch. It was something nobody had ever seen. And you wrote yesterday about how he's taken a little off of it in hopes of controlling it more. So I guess the main thing I'm wondering is, to what extent is there worry that even if that improves his location, that maybe it takes away some of the sort of top-end effectiveness? Or is it just that at this point he's not going to be that number one anymore, so at least get him throwing strikes?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, too. I don't think anyone really can look at him now as a true ace. I mean, it really goes back to his time with the Mets. In the last couple of years, he's been a solid kind of middle-of-the-rotation guy for Toronto, even though he was the opening day starter two of the past 3 years. That's kind of the way he was. I mean, last year he had a solid year, ERA under four. But, you know, the walks have been a major concern for him. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was with the Mets, was walking under 54 batters a year. And each of the past 2 years in Toronto, he was up over 70. And the amount of free passes with the number of home runs that he can give up really has cost him a lot during his days in Toronto. So what he thinks is taking, you know, the pedal, his foot off the gas pedal a little bit will help enable him to throw more strikes on a consistent basis. He thinks that when he was trying to get the velocity up there into the high 70s and low 80s like he used to do, he was coming out of his mechanics a little bit. And to be honest with you, part of this very well could be the fact that he's continuing to get up there in age. And, you know, normally you think of knuckleballers as kind of the ageless wonders out there because of the pitch that they throw. But since he wasn't a traditional knuckleballer, he was generating a lot more velocity than some of those guys that came before him. So it's probably a little bit more difficult for him to get those speeds that he was used to several years ago as well. So I think this is another way to kind of compensate that. Instead of him stepping on the gas as much as he did before, he'll take a little bit off, probably only 2-3 miles per hour. It's more of a mid-70s knuckleball now as opposed to a high-70s knuckleball. But the goal is for him to try and settle in and find command of that pitch more often than not.
All right. Well, Rigger Chisholm, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.